Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Long Shots, our weekly podcast, a place where we discuss about anything and everything relevant from the world of business, finance, markets, policy. What else, Sharad? Anything else you think?
Banter.
Yes, exactly. That's a good way to put it. And before we start this week's banter, a reminder to all our listeners, we are streaming on plethora, that's a nice word, Sharad, don't you think, of podcast apps ranging from, Apple Podcasts, from iTunes to Google, Deezer, Spotify. So do check our channel, search for Long Shots and hit subscribe so that you get that nice little notification every time we go live. With that behind us, this is Nikhil Arora and I have with me reintroducing Sharad Tupran. So Sharad, very active week. Sachin Bansal has invested 650 crores in Ola finally. I don't think it really hits a dent on his exit proceeds from Flipkart.
Yeah, probably rounding error. How much did he make from his Flipkart exit?
Around $1 billion. Yeah. So around 7,000 crores now.
So he has a lot more firepower, if you will.
Yes, a lot more firepower, exactly. He has also invested in, I think, Aether Energy, but that was some time back, which is an electric vehicle startup.
So bikes, right?
Yeah. No, I think it's like a electric scooter kind of a thing.
So much like yourself.
Yes, sir. Anyways. Now, what is the first thing we have today on our plate? You have a flight.
Yes, I do.
Today, you're flying to Hyderabad. Which airline are you flying, sir?
Indigo.
Very nice. So your flight is not one of the ones cancelled?
I certainly hope not.
Yeah.
So just not yet, anyway.
Right. So what's the background here? 30 flights being cancelled every day till March, I heard?
Yeah, something like that. Like a ridiculous number of cancellations, right? It's not entirely weather related.
Right.
They're operational and logistics related, which when that happens, you really start wondering what's happening.
Yeah.
So let's see. I mean, I'm very optimistic that it doesn't get cancelled.
Right.
Because I hate waiting and then rescheduling. But let's see.
Well, I think the original noise that came out was last Friday, which said that 130 flights were cancelled, but then the company kind of contested that's not true. It's actually 30 flights being cancelled every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you mentioned, it's not the weather. The Indigo is facing a pilot shortage.
Yeah, so there's structural challenges there, right?
Yeah. The story is that, because as you know, Indigo is now the biggest airline in the Indian aviation market, and it's expecting almost 100 new aircraft in the next 12 months.
I think they have 40% domestic market share.
True. Yeah. So they have around 200 planes now
coming
in by the end of next year. They had only 100 in 2015, so the number of aircraft have doubled.
Yeah.
And each new aircraft means they need to get at least 10 to 15 new pilots.
Oh, is that sort of the rule of thumb ratio?
Yeah, pretty much, because that's the kind of capacity every new aircraft is creating. So they must hire almost 1,500 to 2,000 pilots in the short term.
Yeah.
And the story is that the capacity expansion uptake has been quite steep compared to the hiring uptake. So they have not been able to hire the requisite number of pilots.
Yeah.
And plus on top of that, there must be some scheduling, rostering issues, which are also lately coming out.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess then a lot of good news. If there's any winners here, it's probably upcoming pilots with a very lucrative job market, I guess, in India and near, no?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. I mean, in terms of requirement,
yeah,
in terms of demand, there is. But it's pretty expensive to...
That is true.
...be a... I mean, there are no subsidies for flight schools.
Yeah.
And there are not that many in India. And the gestation period for a pilot from day one till the time he or she enters the cockpit is almost 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's a long drawn process. There are a lot of regulatory hurdles in between. And the interesting thing is, like, in India right now, there are around 8,000 operational pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And over the next 10 years, it's estimated that almost 17,000 more pilots are required.
Yeah.
Right. Of which almost 9,000 will be first officers who will get promoted to commanders.
Yeah.
And in spite of such a big requirement, hiring has actually slowed down. It went down by 10%.
Yeah.
And it's not just an Indian trend, it's a global trend. And
I was reading Boeing forecast. They were forecasting 250,000 of pilots required over the next 2 decades all over Asia.
Right.
So I guess you'll see some pilots being trained and trying to hit this job market.
Yeah, and the thing is that like a lot of the Indian aviation companies, they are now depending more and more on expats, because within the country, because you know flight schools are not that many, plus it's non-subsidized, plus you know I think Air India is the only airline who actually have their own training facilities. They have their own simulators. Most private airlines actually don't operate mm-hmm. them. They like to think of themselves as only airlines and not training centers.
Got it.
So, but then the market needs to have them.
Correct.
Organically,
yeah.
Which I think they don't. Plus, even when airlines are trying to hire pilots from overseas, it takes almost, you know, 3 to 4 months for DGCA to give security clearance.
Yeah.
And plus, I was reading lately that now there's a new regulatory rule which came in that you need to put in a 1 year notice if you want to change jobs as a commander. Which obviously, like we know how that can wreck labor mobility, right?
1 year is ridiculous. I've never heard that in any other industry.
I mean, it was put in to avoid churn.
Yeah.
But it obviously has other effects.
Yeah.
And I mean, Indigo did a lot of things. You know, Indigo, they also tried to enhance the number of hours which the pilots can fly by actually, you know, rostering them on the same station for long periods of time. But that also kind of backfired because the rules don't permit more than 1,000 hours of flying in a year. Mm-hmm. And Indigo's typical flight is like 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
So no matter what you do, it's pretty difficult to kind of, you know, extract utilization. So plenty of issues going on. Plus, Indigo has to compete with the airlines in China and Middle East for the pilot pool. And they are more competitive when it comes to compensation.
Yeah, no, I was reading about their whole software related issues that they had because of this whole utilization algorithm that they built in terms of pilot and trying to just make it logistically simpler.
Right.
And I think that, like you said, backfired and they couldn't really crack it, and they were more disappointed pilots who were staying away from home much more longer.
Correct.
And they were getting caught up between that stipulated ceiling of 1,000 hours, call it, and then actually managing it, and it was all a big mess from what I read.
Yeah.
But yeah, so structural issues are causing flight delays.
Structural issues, operational issues within Indigo as well as structural issues overall and slowdown of demand. And
you were talking something about air traffic control as well, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, and because I mean, I thought, okay, at least if there is a shortage of pilots, the flights get cancelled.
Yeah.
But if there's a shortage of air traffic controllers, the safety risk is so much higher, right?
Yeah.
And like there are around 2,500 to 2,800 ATC operators in India at the moment, and there is a requirement of 1,200 more.
Yeah.
It's a difficult role to fill for because Indian ATCs are run by the government, by DGCA, so I think by Airport Authority of India, and basically they get government salaries, and ATC is a highly specialized role. I mean, I was reading that in the US, ATC operators on an hourly basis are one of the highest paid, workers, and I'm pretty sure that the government is not able to, you know, match those kind of compensations.
That's
and
interesting,
It's an intense role, you know, like,
it is.
I mean, for hours you are in front of a screen, you are constantly coordinating with hundreds of flights and, you know, even a single error.
Cost of error is massive. It's not monetary. It's human lives.
We have all seen that episode from Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Another interesting video that you might, which I found really interesting was, I think it was a few months back where Air India had multiple instrumentation failures over JFK.
Yeah.
And they were trying to decide whether to go to Newark or whatnot. And
that was a very inspiring.
It's like, I think, a 7-minute conversation between the pilots of Air India and the JFK ATC controller.
Yeah.
And it's, and these pilots are talking about, we've got multiple instrumentation failures. We want to do a VNAV approach.
I remember that. So I think the issue
so
was
calm. Like they were so calm and they landed it like perfectly, and it was apparently a big deal because the nature of the instrumentation problem were not small. They were like pretty massive, and I think there were over 300 people on board. So it's a pretty interesting clip on YouTube. You just have to do ATC Air India JFK and I think you get it. Yeah.
No, the pilots were very calm, and kudos to them for managing to land in such conditions. Plus, JFK ATC is notorious for being very aggressive.
Yeah.
And they really don't, you know, tolerate any fools. But the pilots did very well if you actually, you have obviously listened. And I remember, I think the issue there was that the visibility was very low.
Yeah.
So they needed to navigate, they needed to land using the flight instruments.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There was no, it was very difficult to do a visual landing. And that's, I think, the way most commercial airlines don't do visual landings.
Yeah, right? No.
They typically go through the instruments and
they had failures, yeah.
And then he had to do a visual landing.
Yeah.
And then I think by some, I don't know, chance, the visibility cleared for a small window and then they were able to.
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because remember, it kind of was escalating, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the beginning, he was trying to be very, very, kind of factual.
Yeah.
But then I think he just wanted to communicate to the
seriousness of the failure. Yeah.
Then, but you know, it's very interesting because I think it's Malcolm Gladwell or I forgot that book. Was it The Tipping Point? I don't know. Like that's something which can be easily found. But there was a book which kind of looked at aircraft crashes,
mm-hmm.
right? Close to when they're about to land.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest issue always used to be lack of communication between the pilot and the ATC.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's, you know, paramount. Yeah. That's the entire game. The pilot is on the aircraft because you need someone to communicate on behalf of the aircraft. Most of the systems are now fairly linear. You have fly-by-wire.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, takeoff and landing is completely automated. You have CAT-3 systems where there is an intense amount of fog. So technically, the pilot is basically the main communication channel.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have seen that movie, Sully.
I have, yeah.
So in that, when the bird strike happened,
they
were talking constantly, right? Yeah, they were not letting it go.
Yeah.
In that movie, Flight as well, Denzel Washington, right?
Exactly
same sequence of events.
Landed inverted.
Yeah, but that was kind of, that's where Hollywood took over.
Yeah.
The interesting thing has been that that communication itself becomes spectacularly important.
Yeah.
And that Air India flight was testament to its power.
Yeah, no, it was good. Yeah, and moving on from airlines, and we've discussed a little bit about massive payday that Mr. Bansal had got.
Yes.
But there is another potential payday for a top-notch doctor here.
Dr. Rehan.
Dr. Naresh Rehan,
Yes.
So what's, this has been actually a pretty soap opera-esque story, right? In terms of M&A story, or, you know, backed by private equity players and US private equity players on both sides, buy side and sell side, I guess. And sort of a classic play of geographical diversity, gain footfall in the Indian ecosystem. So what's the story here? Why is Manipal involved now? I mean, well, sorry, Manipal's always been looking, seems to be the acquirer.
Yeah.
And the focus has shifted to Medanta now.
Correct. So the background is Manipal, as we all know, South India based healthcare group. They were pretty much at the front of the race to acquire Fortis Hospitals.
Yeah.
But they were outbid by IHH Healthcare, a Malaysian healthcare company.
Yeah.
And now they are trying to get their hands on Medanta, which is led by Dr. Naresh Rehan, you know, esteemed cardiologist.
What's the valuation sort of? So
I think around 6,000 crores. So
okay,
Medanta is like the holdco, and they operate a couple of hospitals.
Yeah.
The biggest one is Medicity in Gurgaon, which is around 1,500 beds.
Yeah.
Then they also have an hospital in Indore and Ranchi, which are like a couple of hundred beds each. And Manipal has obviously TPG as one of its investor partners. Investment partners. And now they have Blackstone on board as well.
These are big boy private equity guys. Yeah,
these are big boy private equity guys. And actually, Medanta is also has some private equity stakes in it. So 55% is owned by Dr. Trehan and his family, along with the co-founder. Carlyle Group owns 27% and Temasek owns 18%.
Yeah.
And Temasek also incidentally has a stake in
on both sides. Yeah. How do you value a hospital? Is it a typical cash flow based valuation, or is there some specific, like, per room or per bed, or there must be some metrics which are specific to this industry that I've never ever been exposed to this in my life?
Yeah, me too. But I think it's very capex heavy.
Yeah.
Business, and but it's usually cash generative on
day
one. Day
one, yeah.
So I think it must be valued as a conventional business, looking at
cash flow projections
from EBITDA, and then, you know, using like a DCF.
Yeah.
But I think obviously there must be some very healthcare specific metrics when you're modeling those cash flows.
Yeah.
I guess beds
price
have a role to play,
yeah.
price per bed or something.
Because in retail, you often use like per square foot, sales per square foot and things like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, I guess like.
So there must be some utilization metric, right?
Yeah.
So I think it will be pretty much like an airline company or a hotel company.
Yeah.
I think those similar proxies can be built in here.
CapEx heavy,
CapEx heavy plus, you know, any bed unoccupied is basically like a sunk cost. Yeah. So that kind of mindset, like you have the same mindset in a plane. An empty seat on a flight or an empty room in a hotel.
Yeah.
And it's still a, it probably has a reasonable amount of balance sheet modeling involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Asset based, right?
Asset based. It has to be.
Yeah. So coming back, so Manipal, sort of, you were saying, and like, is it entirely to just get more geographical presence across India?
Seems like it. Yeah. Because Manipal is south focused, Fortis was north focused, yeah. Medanta is also north focused.
So how many hospitals does Medanta have? Do you know?
So they have three right now.
One is in Gurgaon that I know.
Yeah,
of.
The Medicity one.
Yeah,
1500 beds. And two are, one is in Indore, one is in Ranchi, and they I think plan to open three more, so six.
Okay.
Potentially coming up.
All in the northern belt, I'm guessing, or no?
Yeah. So the other three are, I think, in Lucknow, Patna, and Noida.
Okay. So yeah. Absolutely north. Yeah.
Yeah. So that might be a kind of reasonable way to look at it. Plus, Medanta is a profit-generating hospital.
Okay.
Even though its revenues have slowed down and its margins have dropped in the last few.
Is that
years.
Because of cost pressure or pricing pressure or both?
Pricing pressure, yeah, because there's a lot of regulatory noise around price caps on, you know, cardiac stents.
Yeah.
And Medanta is pretty much a cardiac hospital.
Oh, yeah, correct.
So that
makes
kind
sense,
of then. Hits the top line in one way.
Yeah.
And I think second is generally there's a lot of regulatory pressure on hospitals at large, you know, because there have been malpractice cases.
Sure.
It becomes politicized pretty quickly. We recall, you know, when we saw, I think it was in Delhi only, there were a couple of hospitals, and I think Medanta had one case, but it kind of grazed through it through an out-of-court settlement.
Yeah.
But that overall has brought a lot of negative regulatory noise on the healthcare space overall. I think in Medanta, there's also an issue of lack of doctors. I mean, there's apparently the attrition churn at the senior level is pretty high. And there was a bit of, along the grapevine, there was a bit of noise that Dr. Trehan actually midway appointed his son-in-law as CEO.
Okay.
And he did not really get along well with the senior doctors. Because, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, in a hospital business, the doctors are the main revenue center.
Correct.
Right? Patients
yeah.
come because of them. They are typically like sales guys.
Yeah.
But they're obviously, the product is much more sophisticated. So they need to be kept happy, right? And I know personally also, like I have a lot of doctors in my family. There's always a constant, you know, kind of tension between the management side and the medical side.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I assume those issues probably also transpired here. And specialist doctors are expensive. They must be getting capitalized on balance sheets. And if, you know, then when the attrition is high, they must be getting hit by write downs because of that. I mean, this is conjecture at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
This is based on anecdotal stuff. I've not really gone through their books. But I think that might be. But there's overall consolidation in the Indian healthcare space anyways, right?
Yeah.
IHH acquired Fortis and something, Medanta might as well get acquired pretty soon. So, yeah. But you know what the interesting thing is about Blackstone, the way it's putting in the 3,200 crores?
Yeah.
It seems like it's not regular equity.
Then?
It's like a structured equity facility. So, they're asking for like a quote-unquote pre-agreed return. There is a earn-out element as well. So, the hospital has to... You know, if it kind of fulfills some financial parameters, they'll get some sort of returns kicking in.
Yeah, so accelerated return generation, right?
Yeah. So, but that means that then obviously there has to be adequate cash management on both sides.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I guess you can do that when there's a business which generates a ton of cash.
Yeah.
You can probably ask for earnouts.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, at the end of the day, it does have very solid backing, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I remember Medanta opened in 2009.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it has grown to a 6,000 crore hospital within 10 years.
Yeah. With just three units. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is massive, right?
Yeah.
Massive growth.
Yeah.
So the demand is there, and the specialization in terms of Dr. Trehan, like he obviously is very, very competent when it comes to setting up healthcare businesses. He pretty much set Escorts Delhi from scratch before it got acquired by Fortis.
Yeah.
So he has the track record, he has the relationships. No wonder they want him to be part of the management post the deal. So yeah, I mean, he'll continue to work even though I don't think he needs to anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's good. That's a good place to be in, right?
Yeah. And let's see how the Indian medical ecosystem evolves, but consolidation clearly happening. And Manipal clearly is aggressively looking to venture.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Interesting times.
Yeah, that's true. And what I mean, you know, in terms of, we can now move from like the private sector to our favorite topic, RBI.
Yeah, our second favorite topic. Our favorite topic is ILFS.
Yes, ILFS, I've not heard about that for quite some time.
But we've sort of put that behind us now.
Yeah, yeah. I think we got, because I don't think anything happened there, right? I mean, yeah. I don't think anything... I don't even remember. What was the name of the guy who ran IFS? See, we forgot.
Yeah,
some Ravi guy. I don't know. He was in London, right?
Yeah,
he was unwell.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, I mean, totally I forgot.
Yeah. Vijay Mallya is coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about that guy?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm forced to call him that guy. I don't even remember his name now.
Yeah. That's the pull sometimes the public.
Because it's a quasi-sovereign institution.
Quasi, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like talking, you brought it back to our favorite topic, RBI.
Yeah.
And obviously, the most topical theme that has been going on with the RBI, other than rate cuts, obviously, has been their management of surplus and dividend issuance to the government. And that's been an ongoing theme. And
so, dividend got announced now, right?
It did, yeah. 28,000 crores, right?
That's the...
interim.
Right.
Yeah, so that takes up total to 68, I think.
Right.
There was 40 earlier done for the fiscal this current fiscal year.
And how does that compare to the year before?
I think the year before was 40,600 change crore.
Right.
So, clearly a step up.
Wow.
And that also included a 10,000 crore interim dividend.
Right.
So this is a step up. And whenever there's a step up, it all obviously makes for flashy headlines. But right. When election is upcoming, it probably gets even more scrutinized, right?
Right.
I mean, there's all these weird theories also that come up, right? Oh, it's being used to fund election campaigns and like there's no...
Probably it's being used to manage deficit and...
Exactly. I mean, that's what the technical reason is.
Yeah.
And it's not just... RBI that's been sort of issuing dividends, right? You were talking about their government's involvement in making PSU banks issue dividends and probably even share buybacks.
Yeah, so I mean, actually, if we step back, I think what is happening at a broader level is that when you look at government's source of revenues, right? It's primarily direct taxes, indirect taxes, and divestments.
Yeah.
Right? So, and divestments as well as, you know, dividends from regulators and PSUs. So I think in our scenario, due to GST, indirect tax has been a bit on the lower end. Indirect tax, we keep on hearing how aggressive the tax authorities have been in chasing for income tax and corporate tax, etc. Angel tax, you know that.
Yeah.
Right? That has also been aggressively being pushed because the indirect tax has not really been in line with expectation.
Yeah.
And the other focus has been on divestment share buybacks and dividends from both regulators and PSUs.
Yeah.
So dividends we have seen from regulators. RBI is one example. I think I was reading that they're also pushing for SEBI, IRDA and, you know, pension fund regulatory authority to transfer more and more of the surplus to the government. And the PSU dividends again have hit like almost 53,000 crores this year.
Yeah.
So it's going on an upswing. Buybacks, I think you were telling me around 14 or 15,000 crores of buybacks have happened. So I think the government is kind of trying to manage its fiscal deficit by looking at non-tax side, you know, of the revenue mix.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very evident as well. I don't think they're even shying away from letting that narrative be accepted.
Yeah.
It's, and like you were talking about this as well, right? On how it's interesting people talk about the cash that's coming back to them from RBI or from PSUs, but there's an offset in which they sort of infuse more capital as well.
One lakh crore of recapitalization has happened in
PSU. So it's just flowing around.
Yeah.
But there is that offset, which obviously doesn't get talked about that much.
Yeah.
But they've obviously stepped up in their infusion into PSUs and...
absolutely. Like I was... there was this opinion piece in Business Standard last week, which kind of spoke of how... A.K. Bhattacharya. I think so. Yeah, you're right. And he was commenting on how the equity investment in Indian PSUs, be it, you know, also in, you know, infrastructure bodies like NHAI, that has spiked up tremendously.
Yeah.
We all know that Indian Railways infrastructure spending has gone up a lot. Most of them has gone in as equity.
Correct.
So yeah, now they are also pushing for payback through dividend. Now the question is how much of the equity is actually being used for organic growth?
That's a debate which, you know, every corporate, like, it's just hard. Like, you can't, like, Microsoft, I remember, for the first 20 years never issued a dividend.
Right.
And the moment they started issuing dividend, the stock price went down because people thought, oh, well, now they don't have any more ideas.
Yeah.
Why are they all this while they
have? Yeah, that's the typical thing when the share buyback also happens, right? I mean, I get that as an investor, you might think that. I mean, as a CFO, your biggest priority, anyways, as a CEO, your biggest priority is to increase revenues, right?
Exactly. Chase growth.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, that's all.
Yeah.
So, if you're returning money back to shareholders, I mean,
yeah, not a bad problem to have, right?
Yeah, Indian IT kind of went through a big buyback cycle as well.
This buyback thing is, I think, not such an old traditional play in the Indian corporate capital markets ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's really took off in the last one and a half, 2 years, I think. People have discovered this all buyback thing, and especially in a time where, you know, people are questioning on their stagnating growth or lower growth.
Right.
One way to it is like, you know what, guys, like, take some back.
Yeah.
We're in good shape. We have enough to chase growth.
Yeah.
Or reinvest in other projects.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's obviously a mix, which obviously...
or we don't have any ideas.
It's such a signaling game, right, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
One event can be articulated or signaled in two such completely different ways. One is, like you said, there's no ideas.
Yeah.
The other is, like, we have tons of ideas, but we don't need that much because we're so efficient.
Yeah.
We hear some back.
Yeah.
So, perception-driven. No, but, obviously, RBI, you know, 68,000 crores in this year's complete fiscal in terms of surplus dividends or surplus, let's call it.
Yeah.
So hopefully it goes a long way and in balancing the books.
In the budget, I was fairly okay when the fiscal deficit target was revised from 3.3 to 3.4. I was like, yeah, fine, 0.1 percentage, fine. It's okay. I mean, for a country like India to actually run on a 3.4% fiscal deficit, I think
it's completely fine. Yeah,
it's completely okay. I think it can be even spiked up more. I am of that school of thought completely.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The leverage, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
If you're
going like 20-30% fiscal deficit, I get it.
Yeah.
Those are red flags. But 3-3.5, I mean, we used to historically run... I mean, if tomorrow, even if crude oil prices spike up again, the fiscal deficit will be expanded.
Yeah, it will hit, yeah. Voluntary control, just externally driven, of course, yeah.
I mean, definitely, there's been repeated demonstration that deficit is being managed prudently, and investors should now calm down on that front, and a bit of, leeway can go a long way.
Yeah. I was reading this article yesterday by JP Morgan Asset Management, who was saying that emerging equities are the go-to place now. They're undervalued. They're undervalued.
Yeah.
But the report and the article focused a lot more on Chinese equities.
Right.
But it was obviously under the umbrella that emerging markets have still done well despite rate hikes and all. The report was making the case that they've stood well and there are a lot of underpriced assets now to be picked up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, doesn't look all that bad, does it?
Now is the time to go in.
Yeah, it's the time to go in, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And with that, we can, I think, wrap up this week's Long Shots. Hope everyone had a good time listening in and would like to, again... remind you that your feedback is most welcome. So do drop in your comments. Feel free to rate the podcast and obviously subscribe to it so that you get that notification next time we go live. We go live every Thursday at 5 p.m. And yeah, we'll see you next Thursday. And this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Charlotte Tupran.
Signing off.